Hello, Jeannie.
I hear you.
All right. So it's Tuesday. It's 1 o'clock, and it's Let's Grill Jeannie. So today you guys have the pleasure of having Jeannie answer all your questions. So if you have a question in regards to raising money, because she's raised a ton of money for Dave, over $150 million. So if you have any questions in regards to raising money, deal analysis, what you may be confused about if you attended the Private Money Boot Camp this week, this past weekend, Jeannie is the person you need to talk to. So without further ado, here is Jeannie with Let's Grill Jeannie.
Hello, everybody. Hope you're all doing well on this very brisk day we have here. We're due for another nor'easter tomorrow, about 5 to 10 inches. Poor Jeff's going to fly out early to get to his immersion training. I want to welcome all new mentorship students from Seattle and Jacksonville, Florida. We're excited to see your progress in our community, and Jermaine, Paul Timmons, and I are here to help with anything that you need from us. Let's talk about a few upcoming events. We have the Fort Lauderdale Immersion Training this weekend, the 23rd, 24th, and 25th. We are off the following weekend for Easter Sunday, and then we're back in San Francisco April 6th, 7th, and 8th for an immersion. Jacksonville is the 13th, 14th, and 15th. Seattle is April 13th. Oh, we have two going on. That's right, two. We have two teams out there. Seattle will be the 13th, 14th, and 15th, taught by Laurie Marie Hines. And then we have San Jose, April 20, 21, and 22. We have the upcoming Commercial Training Academy, taught by Bob Bowman. I will be there. It's in Orlando, Florida, April 27, 28, and 29. It's going to be power-packed, full of information, and Diane Bowman co-teaches that with Bob, and she is absolutely a forensic scientist. She is just amazing in her technology and her knowledge. It's really a wonder to watch. Okay, next we're going to do high fives. Troy Mills, Greg Lawson, they bought a 12-unit in Louisville, Kentucky. Purchase price was $322,500. They found a property on Craigslist through a wholesaler. The value play was market was well below the rent, and two units needed to be rehabbed. Okay, do we have an operator on the line?
Hi, Jeannie. This is Lillian here. How are you?
Hi, Lillian. They all missed you last week. Things are not the same
I missed
when you,
you
don't
guys
do
too.
The Q&A with us. They missed you. They said, oh, where's Lillian? We want her back. So please tell them how they
well, I am
ask
back.
A question.
Of course. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. Star zero if you have a question, please. Thank you.
Okay. Lillian is very, very good at taking your name and putting you in the queue. So if you don't hear anything after she takes your name, know that you're coming up next. I'm going to ask one question, and then we'll see if anybody has any questions. So
and Jeannie, sorry to interrupt you. I'm so sorry, Jeannie.
Okay.
We actually have two questions at the moment already.
Oh, we do. Then let's jump on it.
Yes. Okay. First question comes from Heather. Heather, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. It's Heather. How are you?
Well, how are you, Heather? Long time no talk.
I know. I've missed you. It's so good to hear your voice.
Thank you. What can I do for you?
Well, Jeannie, I have a deal analysis question today, and it's about the Holy Trinity. We are looking in a market that is picking up and getting a little bit tighter, and I know that the Holy Trinity, you know, the cap rate is 8, the debt coverage ratio is 1.6, and the cash-on-cash return is 12, but I'm just wondering if sometimes there's you know, it's okay to go a little lower on the cap rate, like you know, in certain markets, are people taking sevens? And if that's, if they do, do the debt coverage ratio, I'm assuming that stays the same. Like, how does that affect the rest of the Holy Trinity?
The most important number you're looking at is the cash-on-cash return. So if your cash-on-cash return is 12, then you know you can give your investors an 8% preferred rate of return, and you and your sponsor are going to be able to split the difference. But if your cash-on-cash return falls under 12, you're still giving the investors the 8% preferred rate of return. So it's coming out of your carve-out. So you really have to be really careful with that. The only other thing I will mention, if it's a smaller deal and you're only raising a couple hundred thousand, I would just do a partnership and not do a syndication. And then you do a 33 and a third split across the board with the two investors and your own team. So that's something to think about. Then you can go down to 11 and still have a nice little nest egg for each party going into the deal. But if you have a larger deal and you're under the 12, it's going to come out of your carve out.
Okay, that's great, Jeannie. Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate it.
Can I say something real quick, Heather?
Hi, Jermaine. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good to hear your voice, too.
Appreciate that. So another thing that you could probably do, and for people that they could probably do, is if you find that your, say, your cash on cash is, or even your cap rate is below the Holy Trinity, like Jeannie said, you're going to end up eating that or taking a hit on that, but you can also do maybe a five-year projection just to see what it would look like in years 2, 3, and 4, and then that way your team may be able to get it to where it's a, you know, 12 or 13 or maybe even a 14% cash-on-cash return. And so that way you can give a little bit more to your investors, and then you can take what your share will be.
That's a good point. That's what I always like to do, two sets of underwriting, Heather. I do with what it is right this minute and then what it is with what I'm going to make it. So it could have been mismanaged and they haven't raised rents in quite a long time, or they could just need a little bit of lipstick put on the units just to make them comparable with apartments in the area. So right now it's at this price, but, geez, 6 months from now this is what it's going to look like. So your investors don't mind getting 7% for the first 6 months and then 9% after that. So that's something you have to think
about. Okay, great.
There's always solutions.
There's always a solution. That's right. Always more than one way to solve a problem, right?
Yep.
Okay, great. Thank you both so much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Okay, up next we have Roger. Roger, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie. Roger from sunny Southwest Florida. How are you?
I'm doing well, my friend, and how are you?
Oh, good, good. Staying warm.
How's that Kansas City deal going?
Bronson. Bronson? Missouri is the one we're working
on. Oh, yeah, Bronson. Yep.
Bronson, yeah. Kansas, I don't know what happened to Kansas, yeah. I have 2 points, if I may. One is we just sort of evolved sideways into a discussion of whether ROI or IRR is superior in sort of reporting returns. And I think the Lindahl model sort of focuses on ROI, and outside investors seem to focus on IRR. Do you have a comment on that?
I do not. I know we do return on investment. So whenever you pay out interest, it's the return of principal before profit. So people are looking to get a better return than they're currently getting from their own avenue of investing. So when you present a deal to somebody, you're going to show them that, you're going to get all of your money back plus profit in a period of 3 to 5 years. So
yep.
I imagine you can do IRR, but we focus on ROI.
Yeah, I know. We actually put both in our documents. Am I allowed to make a plug?
Yes, by all means.
Okay. So Yates Group USA LLC have teamed with Blue Spruce Holdings on a deal in the Broadway of Country Music in Branson, Missouri. And our projections are above the Holy Trinity, believe it or not. So we are looking for investors. You can contact me at roger.yates@gmail.com, roger.yates@gmail.com, and we'll send you guys a package. Thank you very much, Jeannie and Dang.
You're welcome. I'm glad that you're sponsoring that deal for my coaching students. That's great. Thank you.
We are. Good bunch.
Yeah. Okay, Lillian, anybody else?
No, Jenny, we don't have any further questions. I just want to remind for those who just joined us and would like to ask a question to please press star zero on your telephone keypad. Star zero for questions, please. Thank you.
Okay, so the first question that I had emailed in was from Jacob Belmonte from Chicago, Illinois. I found a property that has an assumption loan with an interest rate of 3.8%. I was wondering if you could explain the pros and cons of assumption loans, and should we be looking at properties that have an assumption loan? So here's the pros to getting an assumption loan. You have a 3.8% return interest rate. You're not going to see that today. You're going to see things in the high fours, or even 5% at this time. The pros is the interest rate. The cons is how many years are left on the assumption. So are you going to get into the property, keep the property for 3 or 4 years, and let someone else assume your loan to finish it off? So if you have a 10-year term left on the assumption, that's a great thing. But if you only have 3 or 4 years left, that's not so good, because usually it takes 3 years to really get in there and make the loan prove itself and get the cash on cash up where it needs to be, and then you get it ready for sale and you sell it in the fifth year. But if your assumption loan is only 3 years, that's very dangerous, because the new interest rate could be in the 6% range, and you could have a hard time selling it. But I like assumption loans mainly because if it has the assumption in place for a certain length of time and you can let someone else assume it again, forecasting is a lot easier. The other thing is it takes longer for the property to close, which gives you more time to raise the money and really get a handle on how the property is being run while you're raising the money and waiting for the assumption to come about. The cons are if your loan cannot be assumed again, that could be dangerous. And the other con is not having at least a 3 to 5 year window to make sure the property is profitable and shiny and new when you go to sell it. Those are my answers. Anything you want to add, Jermaine?
Nope. You said it, and you said a mouthful.
Yeah, I know. But I know assumption loans, and I know they can be really good. ARBA funding is good to work with. But if you cannot have somebody assume your loan again, that's bad.
Yep.
Anybody in the queue, Lillian?
Yes, we actually have two new questions. Up next, we have Carlos. Carlos, please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. I just finished up. Hi. I just did the 3-day weekend here and I had an amazing time. Great information. I'm not sure if I got too excited when they said about raising money, and I might have, like, stuck my foot in my mouth. I went into an investor, or a guy who has connection to investors, and he was asking about the model. And I said to him, well, you know, we're looking at where, you know, it meets certain criteria, and one of it, you know, is with the private investors that we're looking at trying to, they might get 10% or better a month. But I might have stuck my foot in my mouth, and that my question was, like, for instance, if the cash on cash is 12% and then you're telling your investor 8%, are you giving him the overall cash on cash when you talk to investors and they realize that it's going to be a little less that they're getting, or do I need to backpedal now? Because I told the guy, well, we're looking at trying to get, well, because I already told him 10%.
You did a couple of things wrong. Number one,
yeah.
Do you know this guy, Carlos? Do you know him?
I don't know him personally. He's from another network of investors.
You violated SEC rules and regulations, first off. You never give returns to any, you don't give any returns until you've had an established relationship with them. Plus, they should have filled out an accredited investor form for you so that you know he's accredited, because you could be giving some high school kid off the chopping block these kind of returns, and he's going to go blab it to everybody, and then pretty soon we see Carlos behind a few bars.
All right, well, they didn't mention that at the class.
I'm telling you. Be very careful where and when you quote to people. If you're talking to somebody one-on-one and you know them, tell them anything you want. Tell them how many times you go to the bathroom a day. But if you're talking to somebody you don't know, or you're in a group with people, you never know who's in that room. It could be an SEC attorney, and he's documenting what you're saying. Be very careful.
Okay, well, I feel confident that this wasn't one of those guys. I know he's a fellow. I started out with fortune builders, with flipping small houses, and I've done business with other fortune builder personnel or mastery students. So this was another mastery student just reaching out to me when I said, hey, is anybody interested in doing multifamily? And he reached out to me, and he was asking me about the model and returns possibly. So I just threw that number out from what I thought I heard during the three-day weekend.
Okay, so I would in the future caution you on that and tell somebody, you know, it's deal specific.
Okay,
so
very good.
You could have a smoking deal that's going to come out of the gate at 17%, you know, interest. But if you're really pushing it to get to the 12% cash on cash return, then, you know, you could really put your foot in your mouth here. So just be cautious.
Well, thank you very much for that very good information.
Okay, you're welcome.
Okay, up next we have Jean. Jean, please go ahead.
Hi, Jean. This is Jean. it was a pleasure meeting you at the event, the Private Money event. And Jermaine, sorry I missed
you. You're welcome.
No problem.
So before my question, I just wanted to...
He was there for a couple of minutes.
I know. I wanted to talk to Carlos's comment earlier, and then I'll go to my question. So when Bob Bowman was scripting, he was referring to the annualized return. So he said, you know, like an investor would ask him, well, give me an example. He said, look, I don't touch anything unless it's giving me at least a 20% annualized return, annualized return. So it was that comment. My question was regarding the event was Don mentioned, by the way, it was a great event, so I had a great time. The question I had is Don mentioned doing distributions Bob. You know, my ex-manager was Don. That's why I keep that – was Don Bowman, so that's why I keep calling him Bob. So Bob mentioned being careful to not do distributions too early, and therefore running out of money and then having to go and raise money again. So he mentioned possibly waiting a year. I'm not sure if I caught it right. Possibly waiting a year before you actually do the distributions. And if that's the case,
Bob is ultra conservative. And
okay.
I can tell you that today our model is we build in CapEx, 2 months of expenses and a year of CapEx into closing costs other to prevent us waiting. So the first month you take over the property is sort of like getting your feet wet. But 3 months later, on the 20th of the month, if you're doing quarterly returns, that's when you're making your first cash flow distribution. So that's our model, and that's how we have done 37 syndications, and we've done 4 that we did monthly cash flow. So they got a cash flow check each and every single month. So Bob's model is conservative, and you can go that route, but I think you'd be hard-pressed finding investors and notifying them that you're going to use their money for a year without making distributions.
Got
I
it.
Think they're going to be
okay.
looking at somebody else.
Okay. So say that again. You do how many months of CapEx and
we
your
do
model?
2 months of CapEx and a year a year of CapEx and 2 months of operating expenses. We put that in closing costs other. That's just in case we have a hiccup or the bank wants us to get something fixed that we hadn't planned on. We have that money there so that we can do the work and get the reimbursement back from the bank.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And I'll see you in Orlando.
Yes, you will. All righty. Lillian, you have anybody else?
Yes, up next we have Jessica. Jessica, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Jeannie. Thank you so much for
Hi,
your time.
How are you?
I am great. I was at the Jacksonville boot camp this weekend and really enjoyed it. And,
awesome. Yes, Tyler, I heard, did an excellent job.
Yeah, he did an excellent job. I was really enjoyed it and feeling totally pumped and really appreciative of the close support that you all provide because that's what definitely keeps it going. I had a discussion with a commercial mortgage broker, nationwide mortgage broker, last night. This is a person that has a real legit company. Referred to me through another friend of mine who used to do loan processing himself, and I'd had this person's number ahead before being in the boot camp, but I didn't want to reach out until I felt a little more confident. but I feel like I had a really great conversation with him, and I'd just like to check and see if the information that I got from him is, the average kind of thing, or if it's a great thing, or what other questions maybe I should be asking again in the future. But so basically he said that he's got a lot of different programs, a lot of different investors. He does private money, hard money, bank money, equity. They have equity firms. He has people that will do the 65% of the whole value, including so I can do acquisition and rehab costs and get essentially that 100% 100% financing up front when we have the values that are right for getting in at that level. Excuse me. And he also mentioned that they do work with Fannie Mae as well. For the stabilized properties, and that they have, he has investors that many of them are, their minimum input is $1 million, and others that their minimum input is 10 million. And they have, some that are specific there, and those are mostly nationwide. And then he has some special interest groups in California that are, let me add a page on that, sorry. Well, at any rate, in California, I know that they are interested still in doing a lot of business there, and that they have hard money at 7% to 10%. And from the numbers that I've been hearing on the audio CDs and in the event, that sounded like that was a lot better than some of the other hard money.
Well,
but I wasn't sure about that.
A lot better.
That's what I thought. So I was like, yeah, great connection. And
it does sound like a good connection, but I would want to get a few people that you can call that have used their services and verify, because some of this sounds too good to be true.
Okay, so yeah, just essentially like with anything else, getting references.
He is.
I mean, he's a legitimate commercial mortgage broker, and that's all they focus on. They only do commercial.
I mean, it sounds like a TV commercial trying to sell you something to use their services. He's too well-rounded. He does everything you could possibly think of that you would want. So why go anywhere else? So that's just, I'm saying, buyer beware.
Right.
Make sure you reach out and get some references that you can verify.
Okay. And see, you know, meaning like, so how would I do that? Do I say, hey, can I talk to some people that you've closed deals with before, or do I just look up the history somewhere?
No, okay. I would ask him for specific references that you can. Talk to people that have used their services before you buy in. And I would also call Eric Stewart, because Eric is a lender that we have come to a lot of the boot camps, and he knows the scoop. And I know somebody that is the owner of Nationwide, and he doesn't have those kind of services.
The company is not called Nationwide. That's not the name of the company. They work nationwide. They fund nationwide.
Yeah, okay. So they're in every area. All right.
Yes,
so here's Eric's phone number, and just call him and run it by him. I think he'll tell you the same. Get some referrals. So his number is 321-615-8919. And listen, I hope he's the real deal, because you might have found a gold mine there. For somebody that's going to do hard money at 7%, that's ideal. And you're going to do investor money at 8%, and, you know, they're going to take a carve out of the equity. A hard money lender, all they do is get paid their interest on an annual basis, and they don't have any equity in the building at all. So that's a gold mine for you.
And I thought that would be a nice way to get a jump start on things. You know, if I can get it in at that price.
That's
and
why
he also,
I say
you
verify.
Know, and you know, he also has people that are interested, that like to fund in the green building aspect too, which is a special interest to me. So I feel like it's a good connection, but I definitely want to know the path of doing my due diligence in that direction.
Keep the name close to your vest, because if it gets out there, you'll just be a little notch on his belt. That's all.
Okay. Good to know. That was definitely another question. Well, awesome. And there was a term that he used that I wasn't familiar with. I think I did a pretty fair job of coming off as as knowledgeable but he used a term I wasn't familiar with, JV equity. What does the JV stand for?
That's a joint venture.
Okay.
So
okay.
He's joint venturing with other people. Could be another guru that he lines himself up with. They produce the, you know, the technology, but he's the one that does the lending. So it's a joint venture. He's JVing with somebody.
Okay. Well, he was meaning that more for me. I think he sticks to the, brokering side of things. But I didn't ask him about what his personal investing looked like. So leave that once we build a little more rapport.
but
awesome. So I will give Eric a call and talk to him about it and see what other questions I need to do.
Well, that should. Eric's going to say, who is it? I'll use him.
Right. I'll be like, well, I'll let you know when you're looking over my paperwork. Yeah, I'm happy to share. I have actually had the experience where I have not guarded things enough and then they get away from me, and I don't know where that balance is, and that's something I could definitely use a little coaching on, is knowing when to share what information.
You're going to keep it in your sneaker. Today you keep it in your sneaker.
Yes, yeah, that fine art of finding the way of, okay, I'm going to give you this information. Now, how are you going to give me the kickback when you use this information
right.
I'm giving you? So that's when I can share information. All right. Great. Well, thank you so much.
Okay.
I appreciate that.
You're welcome. You have a good day.
You too.
Okay. Up next, we have Anita. Anita, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Jermaine.
Hi, girl.
Hi, Anita.
How are you?
I am good.
And how's Dale?
Ready for spring. I know you guys are with all these nor'easters hitting you left and right. I'm glad you guys are warm and cozy in the office today.
It's 25 out. I don't think it's warm and cozy. I've had a space heater on all day.
Oh, I say in the office you're cozy. That's amazing. Well, at least you can get to work. I'm sure you guys have been inundated with snow, right?
Tomorrow we're getting 5 to 10 inches.
Oh my gosh, that's what you think it's spring. Well, I've got a quick question.
It is spring today.
It's spring everywhere else.
Well, yeah. I know. There's always sunshine in our hearts, as my mama says.
Right.
So anyway, I've got an easy question for you. I am wanting to refi the building we bought last year. As it's seller financing. And so I know Eric is a lender you guys use a lot. Can you give me a couple of other names I could call?
Yep, I can give you David Ruch, R-U-C-H. And let me get his number for you. It is 303-888. Yep, 888-6114.
Okay. And where is he located?
Well, he's got two places, California and Colorado, both.
Okay. So he's a Western guy. Do you have anybody else on the East Coast besides Eric?
He's our go-to guy.
Okay.
If he can't do it, he'll give you names.
Okay. Okay, that's good. I haven't... started calling around yet. I want to talk to you first, but I will definitely give him the first call.
Good.
Okay, you guys take care. Stay warm. It's almost here. Spring's almost here. Here's spring.
Almost. Hey, you take care, my friend.
I will. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yep.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, so I'm going to ask a question from, Darren Bell from San Diego, California. I am new to the mentorship program and am very excited about the program. My question is, should I still be looking at my backyard for properties if my backyard is not that good, or can I look at another market? At the boot camp, Steve said we should be looking at our backyard for our first deal. Actually, I would say if a if a backyard deal comes along that looks good, fine, but jump into a market you know you can get, you know, a good landlord-friendly state like Texas. I mean, you're living in San Diego, so you could go to Oregon, you could go to Phoenix, Arizona, you could go to Texas. All of those are within a one day's flight back and forth, and that's where I would look. Texas is amazing, has a lot of opportunities, is definitely landlord-friendly, and that's what you're really looking for. And I would look at your backyard if you find a motivated seller. But to do a mailing or anything like that in California, I mean, the prices are so exorbitant. So that's my take. Anything you want to add, Jermaine?
No, I agree with you. I mean, if you're in California, unless you see a smoking deal, and I'm not saying, like Jeannie said, you shouldn't ignore it, but don't waste a lot of time in places that are where you're going to probably be paying, like, you know, $5 million for a 10-bedroom, a 10-unit apartment complex. I mean, those things are and when you're dealing with California and New York. So I would look somewhere else and start establishing where your market's going to be.
Right.
Right away.
Okay,
California's a tough market, Jeannie.
Oh, terrible. My next question comes from Andre Benson from Dallas, Texas. It's an easy question. Who is this year's guest speaker at the, he says UP10, we call it UP2018. I haven't heard anything yet. The guest speaker is Sugar Ray Leonard. It will be exciting to see him there. I'm sure he won't have a boxing uniform on, but he is very educated and very real estate savvy, so I think everyone will enjoy his presentation. And, you know, we look forward to hearing what he has to say. And this question comes from Mark Yazbek, and he's from Kansas City, Missouri. What are some of the ways to build credibility if you have never done a deal? Well, you could build credibility by a number of different things. If you haven't done any type of real estate deal, then I would go off of your sponsor's credibility. So your sponsor, who's going to qualify you for the mortgage, has done multiple deals, and that's why he's a sponsor, is to help you with that. And if you're in Kansas City and you want to give me a call, I'll help you out with a few people that may be able to help you build that credibility, so that your next go-around, you'll be able to sponsor your own deal.
Can I make another point, Jeannie, real quick?
Certainly, yep.
And another way that you want to build credibility is you want to start going to your local real estate investment club, and you don't want to go like once a year or twice a year. You want to go every time they have the meetings and start meeting people. Because when you finally start going to investors or to talk to local people in the area about your business, and someone knows a local investor and they say, hey, do you know John Smith? Is he a good person to work with? You want that person to be able to say to you, yeah, I know that person. He's really a good guy, really smart, a good girl. She's really smart. And so that's why you want to start attending maybe your local RIA club to build that credibility also, so people can get to know you.
And you may want to join people that you've met at our boot camps or people that you know in the area. Get your own meetup group going and build a team of people that are going to do certain parts of the job, because there is a lot of work. Somebody's going to do the underwriting. Somebody's going to connect with brokers. Somebody else is going to do the actual walkthroughs of the units. Somebody else is going to manage the properties, and somebody's going to raise the money. So you want to have a group of people that are fluent in any of these areas as part of your team, and collectively that will make your credibility much better
way better
than being a fish out of water by yourself.
Yeah. And there are always Lindahl students who create some type of meetup group that they have once or twice a month. So in certain areas, we couldn't tell you who they all are right now, but if you gave Jeannie or myself a call, we'd probably be able to tell you if they have one in your area.
Yep, definitely. Any questions, Lillian?
Yes, up next we have Greg. Greg, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. Greg Lawson, Louisville, Kentucky.
How are you? Boy, that's an accent.
Congratulations, sure, Greg, on that deal you and Troy did.
Thank you. I have a question on Jeannie's, they say it's your expertise on self-directed retirement accounts. Is there any benefit to have check writing privileges with that, or is it six one way, half a dozen another?
I love that as a syndicator because there is no waiting. I like even better when it's a self-directed IRA controlled by the person. So it's a deemed Roth IRA that they control, and they can make a decision right then and there, write the check, fill out the forms. It saves a lot of 10 to 12 days waiting for a custodial account to review everything and then get back to you saying that, yes, this is okay to invest in. So I love that.
What would be the downside? Is there somebody that's not used to investing themselves and wouldn't know if they were getting into a good deal or not?
I don't have a downside to somebody controlling or having checkbook capability. I don't have a downside because you're not going to talk to somebody unless they're either an accredited investor or a sophisticated investor, and you're going to know this because they're going to fill out a form and let you know, I don't meet this criteria, but I certainly have a working knowledge of real estate or business and understand that I may or may not lose some of my money. So once you get that accredited investor form, you're going to make notes on there. And that's what I do with mine. I make manual notes on my forms. And then when they invest in a deal, I take a copy of those forms and I staple it to the signed paperwork for each of them. Because if you ever get audited, you want to make sure that you have some kind of little history of the conversations that you've had with this gentleman without having to go through a whole search of the computer. So you're going to know if they're sophisticated enough to go into your deal or not.
So chances are they may already know, you know, have the check writing capability anyway.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I don't see a lot of them. I see maybe, you know, in each deal, maybe I have two or three that can make an immediate decision and just write a check right then and there. But most of them do go through custodial accounts. When you get above 70, I don't know if you're targeting older people, but if you get above 70, then even if you're using a self-directed IRA, they don't need to fill out their taxes or anything, and they automatically become sophisticated by being under the umbrella of a custodial account. But if you can get somebody that has their own Roth IRA or their own IRA, which is controlled by them, it's a lot less paperwork. You're only doing 1K1. They can respond immediately. I like it better.
Okay, I appreciate your help. Have a great day.
Okay, you too.
Okay, up next we have Jessica. Jessica, please go ahead.
again. Thank you. Couple of more questions. One, since we were just on that topic of the investors and the private money, when Carlos was asking, you had mentioned, you know, great concern with who we're discussing and what information we're discussing at what points with them. And I wanted to clarify and make sure that I understand that that's when I'm talking to somebody. You know, not when that's not when I'm talking to some to a commercial, you know, a true commercial mortgage broker. I can discuss numbers and you know, and okay, this is what this is how we usually do it. This is how they usually do it.
He's a company. He's got some backing. You know, he's accredited, especially if he's a lender that's doing mortgages or even hard money. They're pretty sophisticated, but if you don't know somebody and you're talking to them about the types of returns that you're going to deliver, that's when you could be behind bars.
Okay, so you can't, so in an initial conversation with somebody when they're like, oh, you know, I'd consider invested with you, what do you do? Then the response is more like, well, you know, we use a very conservative approach. We have a very strong standing with all of our other money people. We've, you know, helped get $5 billion in returns for our investors. And we generally get a better rate than what they're able to get elsewhere. In order to discuss more specifics, I would need to get, you know, XYZ paperwork from you, and then I can give you a little more detail. Is that the way?
So what I would say to cut to the chase, Jessica, is I would say, listen, we're SEC compliant. In order for me to discuss anything with you in those terms, I'm going to need this form filled out. And if you could fill it out, send it to me, and then we can maybe meet for coffee later on in the week. Then you have this meetup, and then you can really sit across from somebody and tell them whatever you want. But when you're on the phone with somebody, you don't know if they have a crowd sitting in their room with them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, you be really, really careful, especially
okay.
on the first meeting with them.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, like, luckily for me, I'm not the cold calling private money kind of gal. But I was just curious, you know, if I'm talking to somebody about it at the doctor's office or the whatever, you know, how I needed to guard myself to not end up in weird.
Okay. When you're in a group, that you need to be careful.
Okay. Good to
and
know.
Someday
so.
You will be the cold calling person. You'll get down to the wire and have 3 days left and need $400,000. You'll be cold calling.
Yep. And I'm up for that challenge, but you know, that's not where I'm starting. I was just like, let's see how we're gonna do that. And once I get a deal under my belt, I actually have quite a bit of access to helping us bring in more dollars, and I have plans on where to go to get that, but need to get a deal under my belt so that I feel more comfortable.
You might want to share your contact information and let the floodgates open.
Yes, I am ready for that. I've got to I've got to finish filling out my coach matching, and then we'll move in there. But I had another question too, because I'm really ready to jump into a deal. My only challenge is finding and getting the deal, but there are some things in my mind that I'm trying to figure out how it gets structured, and who to split with and how to split with. So, you know, say I'm running the numbers on a property, and you know, another team member is taking care of getting the information and running the numbers, and I'm walking the property and I found the listing. And then there's equity partners coming in for whatever's outside of the main portion of the loan. Who gets what? How does that run and split down? How many, you know, how do I need to limit that?
Okay. So you're going to have team members that are going to be under your LLC. So when you put in an offer on a property, it's always going to be either with your LLC and or assigns, or with your name and or assigns. You always want to have and or assigns in there because you're going to assign it to the LLC of the property. The investors are not investing with you. They're investing with the LLC of the property. So here's how the breakdown goes. On your first deal, depending on the cash-on-cash return, say you're taking 30% of the deal. And say you and all of your team members that are working this deal under your LLC are part of that 30%. The investors that get 70% of the deal. Say collectively amongst your 30%, somebody has the qualifications to sponsor the deal. You don't have to jump outside of the group. So the 30% is going to get their side of the deal, which is, in the bank's eyes, 100% of the manager's side. So you take and you divvy up amongst that 100% what portion people are getting from your team. Now, the 70%, the bank looks at that as 100% too. So if somebody puts in $100,000 and you're trying to raise $1 million, you take that 70, so your his percentage is like 0.7% of the raise. And that's he's going to get 7% of the cash flow. So you really have to have a deal and have this operating agreement, which is going to define how the payouts are, whose role is what, who is on the managing side, and who is on the non-voting side, which is the investors. So all of the managers are voting members. All of the investors are non-voting members. Should you have an investor that is putting up more than 20% of the raise, he has to be underwritten. So you always want to forbid that unless you're opening the door for him to get on the managing side.
Okay, so if there's one investor.
If you're raising a million dollars and he's putting up $200,000, he's got to be underwritten. So you want to have him put up $195,000. So he's $185,000. So he stays under the 20% guide.
Okay. And that that keeps us from having to have him voting. It prevents it prevents them from having directed control.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. That is good to know. Is there a section that you can think of off the top of your head in the books or in the audios that we have now where I could go and read up a bit more?
It's in the private money. It's in the private money annual.
Private money section. Okay. All right, great.
Not in the apartment manual, in the private money manual. So
okay, the separate private money manual.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So in a scenario like that, so the 70% that we're referring to as the investors, that could be any portion where like say 50% is the bank and the other 20% is the investor, or
No, this has nothing to do with the bank.
Okay, so no bank involvement.
No, this is when you've gotten your 75% loan to value. What you're splitting is the amount of money you're raising from the investors. The bank is going to get their own interest, 5%, 30-year term. They're done. That's over with. Now you're talking about the rest of the carve-out. So the investors are putting up all of the down payment money, and they are basically putting up your shares in the property because you're taking 30% to make sure that the property runs smoother, that you've done a good job in making sure that their money is safe, you've got enough CapEx money to make repairs that are necessary, you've got the right manager in place, you're going to fill up the vacancies, you're going to make sure the properties run well. And for that, they're paying you. Mm-hmm. And then their part of it is the 70% of the cash flow.
Okay. Got it. They're helping me make up the remaining 25% plus all the acquisition costs and everything I need to get the property to where it's doing what we project it to do, and they're receiving 70% of the cash flow as part of that, and then the 30% of the cash flow is what I'm dividing between those of us it took to get the deal pulled together and done.
Exactly.
Okay, great. You talked about someone being able to be the sponsor on the deal. What does that mean? I have $100,000. Is there something that I have to do for me to put that $100,000?
Yeah.
But I can put it. So what about putting it in someone else's deal? What do I have to do to be able to put that in someone else's deal so that I'm getting that 70%?
Yeah, you could do that. I suggest it because in your deal, you're getting paid last. In their deal, you're getting paid first. But you better make sure their deal is solid and that you've underwritten the deal and that you trust whoever's managing it to manage mm-hmm. it properly. Your money is safe. What I would contemplate is that you put up the earnest money deposits, you put up the money for the acquisition of the property, such as the inspections for going in and out of every unit, for getting the property manager in gear, so doing the lease audit, you're going to put up that money and mm-hmm. you're going to get it back at the closing table so that your $100,000 is always going to be there in your bank account for the next deal and the next deal. Your acquisition fee, now, that's something you can play around with and put some $50,000 or $100,000 in someone else's deal that you like, and it's going to pay you solid returns. But you got to make sure you know who they are and that they're going to run the property well. Get some track mm-hmm. record on them to make sure that your money is safe.
Okay, cool. And what would, you know, I guess at that point I would be considered being the private money. So what step do I have to go yeah. through to be qualified to be in that FCC compliance thing? What I don't,
well,
you know.
You already are because you're sophisticated. So they should be collecting an accredited investor form from you because you have a working knowledge of real estate. You've already closed the deal. And you're ready to invest in their property. So you're safe. You don't have to meet the $200,000 a year or the $300,000 with your spouse and have up to $1 million in assets because you're going to be, you could be a sophisticated investor, and you're allowed up to 35 sophisticated investors in one deal and unlimited accredited investors in one deal. So if
awesome.
They only have you as a sophisticated, they're fine. If they have 10 sophisticated and one accredited, that's fine too.
Okay, great. That is awesome. So essentially, I just need to fill out the paperwork and I'm good. There's not some giant extra steps I have to go through. Awesome.
Because <Nope.
laughs> I think that's the way to leverage me to exactly where I need to be immediately and that I can hone in more on the where I'm finding my deals. You know, I'm ready to take off and run. So that was exactly the information I needed. Thank you so much. This has been super helpful.
I had a lot of good questions, Jessica.
Thank you. You are.
Okay, up next we have Laxley. Laxley, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie, how you mean?
Hello, my friend. How are you?
I'm fine. If you don't mind, I'm having nice weather down here in the 70s down here.
Hush up. Hush up, Laxley. You go to 140
okay.
in the summertime. We don't.
Okay. Well, I'm close to Houston, and I did hear you talk about Texas is a good, a friendly.
Yep.
It's friendly towards landowners. But I want to also follow up what Jermaine said about the local REA. I just joined the Houston Real Estate Investment Group about 3 months ago. And
yep.
I have access to some meetup groups. So last night, one person called me. We are online. We established that we are interested in multifamily. And we have a meeting tonight. I'm going to see him there. He would like to talk to me about the broker representing the buyer. So I want to find out from you what's the downside of dealing, rather than I've never dealt with a broker representing the buyer. What are some of the downfalls from this?
So the buyer's broker is working
buyer's
for
broker.
You, and typically you're responsible for paying them the commission. Oftentimes, a listing broker will want double sides. So if it's a 3% listing, he's getting his side and the buyer's side. But and they won't share. So I'm not saying don't do it, but it better be a smoking deal in order to do it. So if he's going to act as your buyer's broker, know that you're going to be responsible for paying that buyer's broker's commission. Unless the listing broker allows him to share, which is typically not what they do.
So what function do they play? Do they find the property and make the deals for you or what? You still have to do your regular...
They find the property, they bring it to you. You've got to do everything else. But they found the property through a listing broker. You know, some people swear by it, and it's not a deal breaker. If you find a deal that you really like that he brought to you, you can use him as a buyer's broker. The seller will pay the selling listing broker, and you will pay the buyer's broker. And you can raise the money from your investors if it's a really, really good deal. But be very careful. And if it's a marginal deal, know that it's going to come out of your money.
Okay.
To pay him. So just be careful.
Right. Sure.
Don't sign any contracts until I read it, Laxley. Don't
Great.
Sign anything with him. Make sure I see it, because buyer's brokers can be really pushy, and they can say, even if they don't show you a property and you buy a property, you're going to pay them their 3% commission. Whether they looked at the deal or brought it to you or not, you're still going to pay them. And it could be for 2 straight years. No matter what you buy, you're going to be responsible to pay them. So make sure you sign nothing until I look at it, please.
Great, great, my coach.
I want to watch
you.
Your back. Okay?
Sure. What's
okay.
the pocket? Good.
Okie doke.
Thank you.
All right, Laxley. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Take care. Yes.
You too.
Okay, Jeannie. We have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, Lillian, you'll get to go have lunch, and I get to go about my business. I got a lot of calls to make. I thank everybody for being on the call today, and I look forward to our next call. And thank Jermaine for all of his input. And we appreciate you all, and hopefully we'll make it to work tomorrow, and there won't be that bad of a blizzard. If anything wasn't answered that you needed answered, Jermaine, myself, Paul, Jeff, we are all here in the building. Give us a call. Bye-bye now.
Have a good weekend.